सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देशकारिणम जय श्री चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। सो वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फॉर द लास्ट 18 सेशंस, I think today is the 19th session. So we have been discussing from the book Bhakti Aloka. For those of you who might not know, Bhakti Aloka was not originally written in the form of a book. It was a series of essays written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for Sajjana Toshani. He wrote essays on the six favorable items and the six unfavorable items as mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami in the second and third verses of Upadeshamrita, and which was later compiled. These articles were compiled in the form of a book by the Gaudiya Math devotees, and the name Bhakti Aloka was given. So we have been discussing already five essays we have completed. Atyahara Prayasascha Prajalpo Niyamagraha Janasanga 5. And last time we started discussing on this theme of Laulyam. So now we will continue that theme of Laulyam. But before I start, I will request Dada Pramod Prabhu to give a recap of what we have seen till now. And then from there I will take forward today's discussion. Over to you, Prabhu.
ज्ञानातिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। हरे कृष्ण। सो दिस् द सिक्स्थ एस्से आफ् भक्त्यालोक लौल्यम्। सो एडेंट लॉन्गिंग और ग्रीड। सो देर आर थ्री टाइप्स ऑफ लौल्यम्, रेस्टलेसनेस, ग्रीड एंड डिजायर। एंड रेस्टलेसनेस इज ऑफ माइंड एंड रेस्टलेसनेस ऑफ intelligence in two categories. We'll discuss on restless of mind. Restless of mind is due to attachment and due to aversion. Now Bhagavad Gita speaks about two hierarchies. It tells hierarchy for a liberated soul, self-liberated soul is Indriyane Paranyahu Indriyebhyo Paramanaha Manasastu Parabuddhir Yo Buddhe Parastusah. The soul is superior to intelligence, intelligence superior to mind, and then mind superior to senses, and senses superior to sense object. There is a lower hierarchy for a materialistic soul, means who are conditioned. So, indriyanam hicharanatam yan mano vidiyate tadasya harati prajnam vayor navyambasi. So here, the senses are the nature of conditioned mind is to run to the sense objects, and then mind is also controlled by the sense objects, and intelligence, mind is controlling the intelligence, and intelligence is controlling the soul. So spontaneous material emotion because of false ego. So this is how we are controlled by sense objects and senses, and mind is also becoming enslaved by this, and so soul is getting entangled. Now, which of the two hierarchies are relevant for sadhakas? Yeah, the oscillation between higher and lower hierarchies. For a sadhaka, the higher hierarchy is guided by his shraddha, and the lower hierarchy is guided by his swabhav or the conditionings. So when we are performing, what we want is we want to be guided by the higher, but presently because of the conditions we are guided by the our swabhav. Now when we accept a value system which wants us to act according to the higher hierarchy, the soul must dictate the intelligence and the intelligence must dictate the mind. But because of living a materialistic life, we are not able to follow the higher hierarchy. So the higher hierarchy for a perfected devotees, so for them the spontaneous spiritual emotions, that is true ego. Like for A perfected devotee, his senses, mind, intelligence are all spiritualized. So whenever his senses get attracted to sense objects, it is only for Krishna's service and Krishna's pleasure. So that's how it happens. So the materialistic hierarchy, it goes, there is a stage of struggle and the stage of self-realized person is Nishta, and then the hierarchy of spiritual emotions. This is a perfect stage. So journey of a pure devotional sadhaka is initially, it is a materialistic hierarchy. But after his anartha nivritti, the stage of struggle, he comes to a stage of Nishta. So then he will get the highest way, where even though his senses are seeing something, it is in relation with Krishna only. And solution for lavalyam in the form of the restlessness of the mind. So for that, take shelter of goddesses Bhakti Devi. Regulate the senses, give the senses constant Krishna conscious engagement. So three places of residence of lust, mind, senses and intelligence. So lust is in these three places. And easiest way of addressing lust is on the platform of senses. Therefore, one must start with the senses. How he should do? Tasmatvam indriyan adu niyamya arpate bartarshava. So he says that we should start with the senses. We must try to engage all our senses all the time in Krishna consciousness. Why? Because the nature of mind is to think, and the mind thinks of those impressions which are collected through the senses. So that's why controlling the mind, thinking and feeling and willing. So when our senses are constantly engaged in Krishna conscious activity, then the mind gets only Krishna conscious impressions. And if the mind constantly get Krishna conscious impressions, then the mind is forced to think about Krishna. So then how do you regulate lavalyam in the form of restlessness of mind? By taking shelter of Bhakti Devi. That is by engaging senses constantly. So now the point is here, surface impression management. What is that? The nature of mind is, our mind keeps thinking about the last latest sense gratification. So whatever we did now, that only. So that is, if whatever is there on the surface, that is actually what mind is always thinking. There will be impressions, which is inner part. So this surface, we should always keep Krishna conscious impressions. So impressions are collected by the senses. So when the senses come in touch with sense objects, then it generates an impression. And that impression gets stored in the mind. So the latest impression gets stored on the surface. And mind generally acts on the latest impression. So what we should do, mind tend to think about latest sense gratification. So when it constantly engage our senses in Krishna conscious activity, then this surface layer is filled of only Krishna conscious impressions, and the mind keeps accessing that only. So what we should do, the nature of mind is constantly, it is seeking pleasure. It will seek maximum pleasure from whatever is available. So it makes the best use of bad bargain. Therefore, we must ensure that our senses are constantly engaged in Krishna conscious activity, so that it will not get any other thing. The surface is only filled with Krishna consciousness. So by engaging our senses in material sense gratification, we are giving material impressions to the mind. Therefore, it becomes more difficult for the mind to think about Krishna. And then there is mechanical devotion service is better than spontaneous sense gratification. So then this analogy that Prabhuji was sharing. So if a room, it has three windows and one door, and storm is raging outside and dust is coming inside and we want to clean it. The first thing what we should do, we should close all the doors and windows. So before solving the problems of mechanical devotional service, what we should do? We should first stop spontaneous sense gratification. So for that, 24 hours constant engagement of service in devotional service is must. So jnanendriya, the eyes, the ears, nose, tongue, and the sense of touch, karmendriyas, hand, legs, anus, and so on. So it shall all be engaged when the in Krishna conscious activities. When the objects of all these senses are associated within the devotional mode, then the mind becomes fixed on the Lord. Now, the role of intelligence, which is guiding the mind. So intelligence must give guidance to the mind. What is anukul of bhakti and what is pratikul of bhakti? That's how we should use our intelligence for. And aversion should be applied on what is unfavorable for devotional service, and attachment should be applied on what is favorable to devotional service. But if that intelligence itself is restless, how can it guide the mind? So we should make our intelligence stable. So solution for the restless of mind. So give constant 24 hours Krishna consciousness to the senses and sharpen the intelligence through Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So now how to cure this restlessness of intelligence? Intelligence thinks in terms of what is right and what is wrong. So mind thinks in terms of what I like and what I don't like. So intelligence, it should be resolute intelligence. It should not be many branched. So vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahushakaya anantasya buddhayo avyavasayina. So resolute intelligence is possible in bhakti only, because bhakti there is only one object of worship, that is Krishna. One goal of worship, that is prema, and one sadhana, bhakti, shravanam kirtanam. So all are connected to same direction, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna only. But whereas jnana and karma, the one object of worship is Lord, one goal of worship is liberation, but sadhana is many, jnana, karma, bhakti, many things. Karma also, karma has many goals also. And then sadhana also, karma plus bhakti. So that's why it is not possible. Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya pratisitam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samadhuna vidyate. For those people who are attached to enjoyment and power, whose consciousness have been deluded by that talk, the resolute intelligence does not take place. When it sense gratification, it is more difficult. So symptoms of those whose intelligence is fixed in samadhi, this is what Krishna is explaining. He has completely given up all desires which arises from the mind alone and is satisfied with the soul alone by that mind. His mind is not grieved by the appearance of suffering. He has given up all desires during opportunities for happiness, all desires during opportunity for happiness, and is devoid of attachment, fear and anger. Now there are two types of intelligence. One is mundane intelligence, one is spiritual intelligence. Mundane intelligence, the propensity to discriminate between good and bad under the dictation of mind is called mundane intelligence. The intelligence to discriminate between good and bad under the dictation of the soul is called spiritual intelligence. So here, sense objects, senses, mind, intelligence, soul. Your mind is higher than intelligence. But here, soul, intelligence, mind, senses and sense objects. So this is how what we discussed last time. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. This was nice, very nice recap of what we saw last week. So we'll continue our discussion. And some additional points of what we have seen. So we saw three types of lavlyam. So in which we were discussing lavlyam, the meaning of lavlyam is restlessness, greed and desire. You know, all these three forms of lavlyam are detrimental for our progress on the part of devotional service. And then we saw restlessness can be restlessness of mind and restlessness of intelligence. And restlessness of mind manifests in the form of two things, attachment and aversion. So the solution that we saw was constant Krishna conscious engagement to the senses, and we have to sharpen the devotional intelligence using Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So so this is where we were discussing, and then in that, as Radha Pramodpur would describe, you know, we have the higher hierarchy and lower hierarchy, and then how for the sadhakas, you know, our hierarchy keeps shuttling back and forth. We discussed on this, and then we also discussed on, as he said, that you know, surface impression management. How do we you know, in order to stop the restlessness of the mind? Mind is mostly restless due to the surface impressions, which is the latest vasanas that we acquire through our senses. So if our senses are, if we give constant Krishna conscious engagement to our senses, then the senses will actually, then the mind will actually try to extract maximum pleasure out of what we give. So the nature of mind, whatever pleasure we give, mind will try to seek the maximum pleasure out of it. As we saw last time, Kapila Dev says, narakastopi deham vai puman natyaktum icchati. Even in Naraka, the living entity who is suffering, hellish suffering there, he does not want to give up his body. Because even in hell, in between hellish sufferings, he has searched for some source of sense pleasures. And he becomes attached to it. The mind becomes attached. So this nature of the mind is very advantageous to us. Because even though currently the activities of Krishna consciousness may not be very pleasurable for us, but if we tolerate for a while and constantly keep feeding only Krishna conscious impressions mind, then gradually mind settles down and it reconciles to the fact that, okay, I cannot hope for the so-called higher pleasures that I am used to in the form of sense gratification. So I have to seek gratification. I have to seek gratification from what is available. So from whatever is available in the form of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Prasadam, deity worship and everything, mind starts searching for the best pleasure available from that. So that is good. That nature of the mind is very good for us, because mind, as long as opportunity is not there, mind seeks for the available opportunity. Whatever opportunity is available, it will search for the best pleasure out of the available pleasure. And we saw, as Krishna says, three places of residence of lust, the senses, mind and intelligence. Easiest to address is actually senses. So the grosser ones are very easy to address. So basically, the mind can be controlled from sense gratification, because mind is the one which does thinking, feeling and willing. So the thought process of the mind can be adjusted by actually controlling the senses from one side, regulating, giving Krishna conscious regulate engagement from the senses on one side, and on the other side, strengthening the value system or our faith through the by connecting the intelligence to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Right? So this oscillation of this value system, the oscillation bit of the two hierarchies for the sadhakas, as we discussed, the oscillation between the two hierarchies is happening because of this constant tug of war between the conditioning of the sadhaka and the pure devotional faith of the sadhaka. So whenever the conditioning is stronger than the faith, then he succumbs to sense gratification and acts on the lower hierarchy. And where the faith is stronger than the conditioning, he resists the temptation and acts according to the higher hierarchy. So basically, you have to weaken the conditioning and strengthen the intelligence. So that when we strengthen the intelligence, the faith becomes stronger. And when we weaken the conditioning, then the temptations become weaker. So then in this way, the sadhaka gradually moves, spends more and more time acting according to the higher hierarchy and less and less time acting according to the lower hierarchy. So this is what we were discussing. And in this context, we were discussing about the surface impression management, as how mind generally dwells on the freshest impressions. Like today, for most of the day, I was meditating on those activities, the people whom I met today, the conversations that I had today, at the most yesterday, Or if I had some very powerful, deeply impactful meetings with someone a few days back, then still those thoughts are still there. But then beyond few days, mind has to really, once in a while, some stray thoughts may come, but generally mind dwells around the very fresh experiences the mind has had. So in that context, we were discussing, give the senses constant Krishna conscious engagement so that the fresh thoughts that the mind has to dwell upon are all connected to Krishna. So this is what we had discussed as surface impression management. So like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, one has to arouse a mood of devotion in all these objects. You know, taste, form, smell, touch and sound. These are the objects of the senses. So if one arouses a mood of devotion in all these objects and enjoy them, then devotional service is cultivated. Okay. So, and the role of intelligence is to tell the mind, look, I know that your role is to accept and reject things. I will tell you, you know, what you should accept, what you should reject. Whatever is anukul for bhakti, you accept it, and whatever is pratikul for bhakti, you should reject it, like that. So he says that, so ultimately, the intelligence should also not be restless. So the restlessness of the intelligence means what it considers to be correct and what it considers to be wrong. So the intelligence cannot be confused in that respect. The intelligence or faith, we cannot say that if the intelligence itself is confused whether this particular object is actually favorable for bhakti or not, then the mind will, how will motivate the mind to get attracted to that, attached to that particular object? Or unless if the intelligence itself is not convinced whether this particular object is unfavorable for bhakti, then how will it stop the mind from getting attracted to that particular object? So he says, when the restlessness of the intelligence is vanquished, the mind can regulate attachment and aversion for sense objects by the strength of that intelligence. Because on one side, the mind needs the support of intelligence. Support of intelligence means mind should be regulated in the form of our renewed value system, the pure devotional value system. That should be very clear. Okay. So therefore, the solution for the restlessness of the mind is give Krishna conscious engagement to the senses on one side and sharpen the intelligence through Dhadu and Shastra on the other side. Then we discuss about the restlessness of the intelligence. We saw there are two types of intelligence. Resolute intelligence and many branched intelligence. Bahu shaka hi anantastayo avyavasayinam vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana. So resolute intelligence is that which is there for a devotee only. How for the karmis, jnanis, yogis, the intelligence is always irresolute. We saw this, right? And for one whose intelligence is very fixed, we saw the symptoms of such a person, of a sthitapragya. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan parthamanogatan atmanyevatmanatushta sthitapragya dochate. So when he completely gives up desires which arise from the mind, which means sense gratificatory desires, and is satisfied in his pursuit of role. But the application for a devotee is when he completely gives up activities for atmiya preeti and only engages in activities which pleases Krishna. So then that is called as he is sthitapragya on the platform of devotional service. And such a person is not affected by happiness, distress, not affected by the dualities, like that. And then he says there are two types of intelligence, mundane intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Mundane intelligence is one which follows the lower hierarchy, where that intelligence is controlled by the material mind. And spiritual intelligence is that which follows the higher hierarchy, in which the intelligence is controlled by the soul. that we saw. Okay, I think this is where we, this is where we ended our discussion last time, where we ended by telling the intelligent also perversely accepts materialism only when under the control of false ego. So when intelligence is under the control of the false ego, intelligence means what? It accepts a value system. What is right, what is wrong? That is the platform in which intelligence acts. So when intelligence accepts false ego, then that false ego says, oh, this material enjoyment is right. Material suffering is wrong. Material morality is right. Like that, it gives various types of false notions about what is right and what is wrong. And when the same intelligence is under the control of the pure ego, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas, when it identifies as the true self, then that intelligence becomes pure and it can control the mind very nicely. So this is where we ended our discussion. So we are currently discussing Laulyam in the form of restlessness, and in that restlessness we are discussing about the restlessness in the form of restlessness of the intelligence. So we still have some slides to cover in completing this restlessness of intelligence, and then we will discuss Laulya in the form of greed, and then finally we will discuss Laulya in the form of desire. So these are the other topics that are left, but before we continue that, any quick discussion points, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add based on what we have discussed till now? Yes, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. In reference to the two hierarchies, the lower and the higher hierarchies, in the higher hierarchy, the intelligence controls the mind, right?
Yeah.
Now, in that hierarchy also, the senses control the sense objects, right?
The senses control the sense objects. Yeah. Yes, that is in the higher hierarchy. In the lower hierarchy, it is the sense objects that control the senses.
Right. In the lower one, the sense objects control the senses.
Correct.
And the senses control the mind.
Correct.
And the mind controls the intelligence.
Correct.
Okay. But in either hierarchy, is the soul that controls the intelligence or not?
No. Only in the higher hierarchy, the intelligence takes dictation from the soul. But in the lower hierarchy, the soul is almost passive. The soul is passive because the other elements are more powerful, and the soul becomes literally covered by layers of conditioning. So the soul's influence not experienced by the intelligence and mind and senses. Rather, they exert their influence and drag the soul to lower and lower regions.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so the reason why I had a little confusion about that part was because, I mean, nothing in the body can take place, right, without the sanction of the soul. I mean, the initiative yeah. comes from soul.
Correct.
In either case, right?
Yeah. That is there. So ultimately, mind, senses, intelligence are all inanimate objects. They yes. need the animating force of the soul. There is no doubt about that. But when when the connection between the soul and these mind intelligence, etc., when the connection is made through the conduit of true ego, then the intelligence takes dictation from the soul and it dictates the mind, then mind dictates the senses. But if the if it is connected through the conduit of false ego, then the soul becomes passive. So then the senses give direction to the mind, and the mind gives direction to the intelligence, and the intelligence just keeps dragging the soul all around.
But yeah, but in that case, the intelligence, you know, because in the higher case, right, the intelligence takes dictation from the soul, but in the lower case, the intelligence takes dictation from the conditioning.
Mind.
Should we say?
Mind.
Mind from the mind.
Yeah.
Intelligence takes, okay. Yeah. Which is the conditioning, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then second question is we said that lust has three resting places, mm-hmm. the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. Mm-hmm. So when the lust is found in the senses, mm-hmm. we call that sense gratification, you know, like ordinary sense gratification. When the lust is in the mind, we call that restlessness. In other words, we call it, depending upon where we find the lust, do we call it different things?
I mean, I am not aware of that kind of terminology.
Okay, so you were making the point though that, you know, we find the lust in these three resting places. Uh-huh. So I thought that you were making distinctions according to where we find the lust, no? Like, when
not,
we find
not
it
in
the
terms of. Yeah, I was not giving a separate terminology for them, as far as I understand.
Okay.
But yeah, these are the three resting places, and of the three, when lust mess in the mind, controlling it becomes very difficult, because to control sense gratificatory thoughts are very difficult, but somehow to regulate the senses and sharpen the intelligence from these two sides, it's easier. So we focus on that, and automatically mind gets controlled. So the lust on the mind is the most difficult to control. So it can be controlled by sharpening the intelligence through Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and by regulating the senses by giving only Krishna conscious engagements to them. That way the mind becomes, transformed.
Okay, so I think the distinction I was probably looking for was when lust is in the intelligence, we mm-hmm. recognize that lust is there because it's taking dictation from the wrong place. It's taking dictation from the mind. That's how we
yeah.
recognize lust in the intelligence. And we recognize lust in the mind in the form of...
I will clarify.
Okay.
We recognize lust in the form of intelligence when...
Uh-huh.
When it starts justifying and giving proper logical reasons for indulging in sense gratification.
Uh-huh.
We identify lust in mind by identifying our natural inclination, where our mind runs.
Mm-hmm.
We identify lust in our senses by how they react involuntarily to coming in touch with sense objects. Like our mm-hmm. eyes look, our eyes looks at a wonderful eatable, and our tongue automatically starts salivating. So these are like involuntary bodily response. to an object of sense gratification. So senses, so we can identify lust in the senses by how our senses involuntarily reacts to object of sense gratification, and mind by even in the absence of an object of sense gratification, how our mind automatically starts thinking, feeling and willing those objects. And by, we identify lust in intelligence by how we are justifying, planning and justifying our sense gratification.
Yes, yes. Oh, that was so beautiful, Prabhu. Thank you so much. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Anything else anyone would like to share as add before we move ahead to our next discussion? Okay. So let's continue then if there is no discussion point. Okay, there is something in the chat box. Let's check out. Okay, there is a question which says, can you give an example to understand his higher power can come under the control of, how higher power can come under the control of lower power? I am trying to understand your question. Is it how higher power can come under the control of the lower power? Is that your question, Paul? Yeah, how? When you say higher power, do you mean to say the soul? I mean, I'm just trying to understand the context of your question. Yeah. So how the soul, which is higher, can come under the control of the lower thing? So soul is most powerful. But when the soul misidentifies with body under false ego, the soul cannot realize its power. Like, for example, when Hanumanji was on the shores of the ocean and everyone was asked how many yojanas you can jump and come back, they were asking, and Ada and others, they were telling, I can jump so many yojanas, so many yojanas, so many yojanas, like that. But Hanumanji was just keeping quiet because he forgot his actual power. And then Jambavan or someone, they had to come and remind him. So similarly, the soul is Tachidananda. It is by nature capable of experiencing eternity, bliss and knowledge. But under the influence of false ego, it does not realize any of that. It, under the influence of false ego, the soul identifies with achit, asat, nirananda body, that which is temporary, non-cognizant and full of suffering. So therefore, it can come under the control, under influence of illusion. Okay. The soul actually is not controlled by any of these elements, but under the illusion, the soul imagines to be controlled by them. So that is the understanding. Otherwise, matter cannot touch spirit. But spirit can, this infinitesimal spirit soul can imagine to be controlled by the matter. So this state is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in many places as Swapna Drashtur Ivanjasa, just like a person in dream. A person in dream, he dreams as if a tiger is chasing him. Okay. And he becomes really very, very afraid and sweating, and sometimes he screams in his dream and all that. But in reality, there is no tiger which is chasing him. So, like that, in reality, you are right when you say that the higher power cannot be controlled by the lower power, but the higher power can imagine to be controlled by the lower power. So that is the state of illusion. Again, in the same verse, Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto, he says, Atmamayam Ritherajan Parasyanubhavatmanaha Na Gateta Artha Sambandaha Swapna Drashtur Ivanjasa. He says, in reality, there is no connection between body and soul. But the soul can imagine an imaginary connection between the body and the soul. And with that imaginary identification, it can think that it is controlled, it is being controlled by body and senses and mind intelligence like that. But in reality, it cannot be controlled. So it's an imaginary state, but that imaginary state or the dream state seems very, very real actually. Is that relevant, Prabhu? I don't know if I answered your question. Okay. Anything else before we move ahead? Okay, let's continue then. Now he says, so when under the control of pure ego, so he says the intelligence also perversely accepts materialism only when under the control of false ego. So when the intelligence is under the control of false ego, it accepts materialism. It says materialism is right. Materialism is right. So, you know, I have to become rich. I have to fend for myself. I have to have many houses. You know, this is right. This is wrong. To be poor is wrong. To be rich is right. So these are all intelligence based materialistic growth is right and lack of it is wrong like that. So when under the control of pure ego in the form of identifying oneself as the servant of Krishna, the intelligence is always naturally pure. Therefore, the Vedas establish that the knower of the body is intelligent. So then he says that spirit soul is higher than the intelligence because intelligence is only the soul's propensity. So the real intelligence is actually the soul's propensity only. When the living entity realizes himself as a pure spiritual particle, then his spiritual ego in the form of identifying himself as the servant of Krishna naturally arises. Jeev Krishna Das Ei Vishwa Karloto Ara Dukkanai. So when the soul identifies with his spiritual, true spiritual ego, at that time the intelligence in its pure form rejects materialism and accepts spiritualism. So intelligence works in the form of right and wrong. But when it is, when under false ego, it chooses right and wrong in terms of materialistic philosophy. Okay. And then when it is under ego, okay, it chooses right and wrong in terms of ability to bhakti. Okay. At that time, a living has no desire other than the service of Krishna and he rejects material desires as insignificant. So that is what? So that is spiritual intelligence. In this position, the living entity is known as Stita Pragya or transcendent situated or Stita Dhir, steady minded. Being empowered by spiritual potency, the intelligence then becomes steady and controls the mind and heart by regulating them. Do this, don't do this. This is right, this is wrong. Like that, intelligence probably guides the mind and senses. then the mind under the direction of the intelligence controls the senses by regulating them, and a favorable mood for devotional service manifests in the sense objects. Then the senses also, the nature of the senses is involuntary response to sense objects. So the sense objects, the senses also become accordingly, the senses also become accordingly trained. Okay. They will naturally start getting attracted to those objects which can give pleasure to Krishna. They will, the tongue will naturally get attracted to Charanamrita of the Lord, or the foot wash of Vaishnavas. The eyes will naturally get attracted to the deity forms of the Lord. The eyes will run behind the deity forms of the Lord. Okay. The ears will run towards the direction where Kirtan or Katha is going on. The nose will directly run to a place where incense is burned for the pleasure of Krishna. So like that. So that is the nature of the senses, is to respond to objects of sense gratification. But they actually, when they get spiritualized under true ego, they are actually properly regulated by the intelligence. This is called as Indriya Nigraha, controlling the senses in devotional service. Whatever arrangements are there for controlling the senses in the paths of dry knowledge and renunciation does not properly control the senses. This is mentioned in Bhagavatam also. Yamadibir yogapataihi kamalobadibir muhuhu mukunda sevaya yadvat tata atma adhana shamyati. Mentioned in Bhagavatam that by this process of yama, niyama, asana, etc., to some extent you may control kama, loba, etc., but it is not complete control. And by this kind of insufficient control, it does not lead to satisfaction of the heart. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned, Vishaya vinivartante nirahārasya dehinaha rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. One who refrains from eating also stops the sense objects from functioning, but the desire for sense objects remains. Having seen the Atma, one can stop that desire as well. Okay. This is real sense control. So real sense control means detachment. Real sense control means you are not struggling to control, but because of developing a higher taste, you are naturally attracted to the objects of sense gratification. This is real sense control, right? So he says, one should spiritualize the senses and control them with the mind. And one should spiritualize the mind and control it with the intelligence. By this process, laulya in the form of restlessness of the intelligence and mind is vanquished. Okay. So one should spiritualize the senses by giving them Krishna conscious engagement and control them with the mind. One should spiritualize the mind. How? Because now that the mind is constantly getting only Krishna conscious impressions, the mind is naturally able to meditate on them. One should control it with the intelligence. How? By that intelligence which is sharpened by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And in this process, the restlessness of the intelligence and mind is vanquished. When the intelligence is restless, the mind cannot be fixed. Which means, when what is right and what is wrong is not clear, then the mind can freely, mind gets license. Because the mind say that anyway the intelligence is not very clearly restricting me from indulging in this kind of gratification. So till the intelligence is clear, the mind has the license to indulge in that gratification, object of gratification. Okay. So the restless intelligence wanders sometimes in karma, sometimes in yoga, sometimes in dry renunciation, and sometimes in dry knowledge. You see, these are all the nature of the intelligence. Intelligence works in on the platform of ideologies. Intelligence, ideology, mind, inclinations. Okay. So, if the intelligence is not clear, it is wavering between ideologies. While one ideology may, say that, okay, sense gratification is okay, limited sense gratification is okay, and another ideology may say, no, no, it is strictly not okay. And then the third ideology may say, you know, whatever is pleasing to Krishna, one should accept it. So when intelligence is not very clear, then the mind, for the mind, it is very wonderful actually. Because till the evidence becomes clear, the mind has free license to indulge in whatever it wants. Okay. So, to fix the intelligence in bhakti by giving up restlessness, the Srimad Bhagavatam proceeds. So, if one accepts the ideology of Srimad Bhagavatam, when the intelligence accepts the ideology of Srimad Bhagavatam and becomes fixed in it, so what is the understanding? So now Bhagavatam is going to tell what is right, what is wrong, what you should do, what you should don't, what you should not do. Okay. So he says, Yat karma bir, yat tapasa, jnana vairagya taschayat, yogena dana dharmena shreyobir itarairapi, sarvam mad bhakti yogena mad bhakto labate anjasa, swarga, apavarga, mad dhama, katanchit yadivanchati. So the verse says, whatever can be attained by jnana yoga, tapasya, etc., all that can be attained by my devotee by practice of Krishna consciousness. So one need not, so when the intelligence says, look, even if you want to enjoy, then you don't have to do karma, jnana, yoga, etc. Whatever you want to attain by performing any of those activities, you can attain by performing devotional service only. So in this way, when intelligence accepts the ideology of Srimad Bhagavatam, then it is very clear about what is the right sadhana and what is not the right sadhana. Not right sadhana is when pure bhakti practices are mixed with karma, jnana, yoga. It is not right like that. So, and further it is mentioned in Bhagavatam, Na kinchit sadhavo dhira bhakta hyekantino vanchantyapi mamaya dattam kaivalyam apunar bhavam. Because my devotees possess saintly behavior and deep intelligence, they completely dedicate themselves to me and do not desire anything besides me. Indeed, even if I offer them liberation from birth and death, they do not accept it. So, the intelligence is very clear. What is anukul for me bhakti, dhinukul, this is pratikul, like that. So considering all this, the practicing devotee should give up laulya in the form of restlessness and attain fixed intelligence in devotional service. Which means, Atayeva Bhagavata Karaha Vichar. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that one should sharpen one's intelligence through the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the point. So one should sharpen one's intelligence through the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. We should not allow our intelligence to be to accept value systems which are provided by any other literatures, including Vedic literatures, whose conclusions may not necessarily align with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should understand that all Vedic literatures are written for different audience, while Bhagavatam is written for pure devotees. So But so therefore we should not accept the ideologies from even our Vedic literatures whose conclusions may not necessarily align with the pure devotional conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So for us, for devotees, you know, what is fixed intelligence? What is a peaceful intelligence which is not restless? It is only that intelligence which has purely accepted the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nothing else. That is a peaceful intelligence. So in this way, he concludes this section on restlessness. So in restlessness, we discuss restlessness of the mind and restlessness of the intelligence. Okay. In essence, how do you control the restlessness of the mind? By giving Krishna conscious engagement for the senses, and on the other side, by sharpening the intelligence. And then in restlessness of the intelligence, we understood, train the intelligence according to the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if I have to summarize whatever we have discussed till now in two sentences, this is the understanding. We control the restlessness of the mind by regulating the senses and by sharpening the intelligence. And how do you regulate the intelligence? By training it according to the ideology of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's all. So this is the essence of what we have discussed till now in Laulyam in the form of restlessness. So Laulyam, as we saw, had three meanings: restlessness, greed, and desire. So till now we have completed Laulyam in the form of restlessness. So how is Laulyam restlessness? So Laulyam means lolata. Lolata means, you know, vacillating between this and that, this and that, this and that, like that. So that lolata, the state of being lolata, you know, jumping from here and there, here and there, here and there, due to lack of steadiness, that is called as Laulyam. So this is where we ended our so before we move on to Laulyam in the form of greed, if there are any quick discussion points, questions, comments, anything anyone would like to share as that, we will take. Anything? Okay, there is one. Okay, two hands up. Okay, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Yeah, actually, these were the identifiers I was looking for before. You said that Laulyam comes in the form of greed, desire, and restlessness. That's what I was talking about earlier. So, let me just get a pen. So, greed, Laulyam is greed. When let's say the desire for sense gratification rests in the senses, is it?
No, I mean that's not the way it is described here.
Okay, let me just write this down. Greed, desire, and restlessness.
These are the three meanings. These are the three meanings of Laulyam. The Sanskrit word Laulyam has three meanings. One meaning is restlessness.
Uh-huh.
And another meaning is greed. And the third meaning is desire. So he is going to address, and all three are actually obstacles to devotional service. So till now we have only discussed about restlessness. So now we are going to start discussing about greed.
Okay, so the restlessness that we've described so far is only as it refers to the mind, is it?
Mind and intelligence. We saw restlessness mind of mind and restlessness of intelligence. Both we saw.
Okay. So greed and desire we have not yet discussed.
We have not yet discussed. We are going to start. We'll start discussing now.
Okay, thank you, Guru.
Thank you. Okay. Krishna Nam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes.
Prabhu, we say that the restlessness of mind can be controlled by sharpening the intelligence and engaging the senses both ways. Isn't there another method that by chanting the restlessness of mind can be controlled?
Yeah. By chanting, you are giving
engagement to senses.
Engagement to the tongue and the ears, and it transforms the heart also. So it is sensory engagement only.
Yeah, so without touching the intelligence, only by engaging the senses, we can control the mind, no?
But for that chanting to work, your faith should be very strong. And faith is nourished when intelligence gets nourished. If you don't know the glories of chanting, then how will you get the inspiration to chant continuously? The glories of chanting, the intelligence only has to convince the mind. Otherwise, without Sambandha Gyan, how is one going to, without proper Sambandha Gyan, how is one going to continue practicing one's sadhana with conviction? So intelligence is very important actually, sharpening it. Vani Shri Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes,
before even I ask my doubt, please excuse me if you find my question weird, and you can ignore if it is weird.
No question is weird, Mataji. You can ask, no problem.
Okay, I'm just a neophyte Prabhu, so my understanding might not be so deep or whatever is from that perspective is what I meant. You just made a point to regulate the restlessness of the mind. Two aspects. One is to sharpen the intelligence. Second mm-hmm. is to regulate the senses. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, intelligence, you made again two points. While all the Vedic scriptures might not come to the same conclusion as Srimad Bhagavatam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I was introduced straight away to Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many other spiritual on seekers
mm-hmm.
who might kind of, you know, get to other scriptures like, say, Upanishads or other books of Vedas, because they wouldn't mm-hmm. speak directly the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Correct my understanding if it is wrong, Prabhu, please.
Till now, perfect, Mataji. Go ahead.
So is it that for other spiritual on seekers like, say, Jnanis or like, you know, the Karmis, you know, from the point of Karma Yoga or mm-hmm. like the mystic yogis, you mean to mm-hmm. say their mind would not be like, what do you call, their mind would still be restlessness because their understanding of the absolute truth is not realized? So will their mind still continue to be in restlessness kind of state of mind, Prabhu?
In one sense, not to the extent that a devotee's mind becomes peaceful. Not to that extent.
Okay.
Because that is why Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakale Ashanta. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta. So he says these Bhukti Kamis, which are the Karmis, Mukti Kamis, which are the Jnanis, Siddhi Kamis, which are the Yogis, they are Sakale Ashanta. At some point, at some level of other sense of dissatisfaction and restlessness will be there in all of them. But only a Krishna Bhakta can become peaceful, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Okay. if there are no further discussion points or questions, I think we will move on to the second form of Laulyam, which is greed. Okay. So here, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, another meaning of the word Laulya is greed. If greed is directed to other objects, then how can it be applied in relationship with Krishna? So if greed is directed to other objects, objects of gratification, then how can it be applied in relationship with Krishna? Greed should be carefully engaged in the service of Krishna. So we have to understand we can engage greed in service of Krishna only if we are attached to Krishna and things related to Krishna. Okay. So just like a parent becomes very greedy to accumulate objects which can potentially give pleasure to the children because of his attachment to the children. But you will never see the parent accumulating objects greedily accumulating objects for the pleasure of someone else's child. Why? Because he has no attachment. So we can become greedy for Krishna only if we have attachment to Krishna. Just because we have greed for material objects, we cannot automatically turn the greed to Krishna. You cannot take the greed and change the object of greed. It does not happen like that. You know, like we talk about dovetailing, anger, greed, etc. So we may, Bhagavad Gita says, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsan Sangasteshu Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kamat Kamat Krodo Bijayate Kamat Krodo Bijayate. So first thing he says, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsa. Whatever you are meditating on, you will develop Sangha, attachment. Sangat Sanjayate Kama. Whatever you are attached to, you will develop a deep desire to enjoy it. And when the deep desire to enjoy it is stopped, it will lead to krodha or anger. So now if someone says, "Arey, you don't have to give up your anger, you just direct it to Krishna." It does not happen like that. Wherever your attachment is, when that attachment is taken, that's where anger will go. And where your attachment will be, whatever you are meditating upon, that's where our attachment will be. Right? So we can't meditate on material gratification and hope to become angry on those who hate Krishna. That cannot happen. So first thing is, as he says, Kama Krishna Karmarpane. One should develop attraction to Krishna karma. So before developing attraction to Krishna karma, one should develop attraction to Krishna. So one becomes deeply attracted to Krishna, then actually that attraction to Krishna will generate all the other emotions in connection with Krishna. Lobha. It will generate greed. How? Because we are so attached to Krishna, we will become very greedy to accumulate things related to Krishna. We wish to collect some, we wish to buy beautiful dress for worshipping Krishna, for decorating Krishna. We wish to chant more and more rounds for the pleasure of Krishna, But for all of that, first attraction to Krishna has to be there. So it is just, so this verse by Narottam Das Thakur, which is often quoted, Kama Krishna Karmarpane Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane Loba Sadhu Sangha Harikata Moha Ishta Labha Vine, like the Niyukta Kariba Yata Tata, you know, he Narottam Das Thakur says. It may seem like, oh, if you are lusty, no problem. If you are greedy, no problem. If you are, you can dovetail all these anarthas in Krishna's service. No, this is not correct actually. So all these anarthas cannot be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Anarthas have to be given up. What Srila Narottam Das Thakur indicates is that don't worry, even on the platform of spiritual perfection, there is scope for expression of all these emotions. You can become angry in Krishna consciousness. You can become greedy in Krishna consciousness. You can become lusty in Krishna consciousness. For all of that, you have to first become Krishna conscious. So you can become Krishna, when you become Krishna conscious and develop deep attachment to Krishna, because emotions are generated due to attachment. So material emotions are generated due to material attachments. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madamatsarya. And spiritual emotions are generated due to spiritual attachments. So if we are not, if our attachment is to matter, then we should not think that the emotions we will generate lust, anger, etc. in relationship with Krishna. It is not possible. So Srila Narottam Das Thakur is not suggesting that we dovetail these kind of anarthas. What he is suggesting is that, if you develop attachment to Krishna, then on the platform of when you get into Krishna's family, in Krishna's family, your life will not be boring, emotionless life. It will be emotionally vibrant existence. Because these emotions is what keeps life very vibrant. So when you give up this Maya samsar and enter into Krishna samsar, Krishnera samsara kodi chadi anachar. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishnera samsara kodi chadi anachar. Give up all this inappropriate behavior and develop and try to become a family member of Krishna. Krishnera samsara kodi chadi anachar. Krishna mata, Krishna pita, Krishna dhana pran. So when we develop a relationship with Krishna and attachment to Krishna, then we will see that life in relationship with Krishna is vibrant with emotions. But those emotions are not anarthas. They become bhava. Okay. That greed is not born out of rajogun. That lust is not born out of rajogun. That anger is not born out of tamogun. Right. So these are spiritual emotions. So basically, what here Srila Narottam Das Thakur is indicating is he is not suggesting that we should that we can dovetail these anarthas. Anarthas cannot be dovetailed. Anarthas have to be given up actually. Right? So, but what he is suggesting is if you develop attachment to Krishna, then you will see scope for exhibition of all these emotions which show so much vibrancy to your life. That's what he is indicating here. So greed should be carefully engaged in the service of Krishna. So as we saw, we can engage greed in service of Krishna only if you are attached to Krishna and things related to Krishna. Greed for material enjoyment should be conquered by the above mentioned method. That is why it is said that persons who are overcome by lust and greed cannot become as pure through the process of yoga, beginning with Yama, as they can be by serving Krishna. This is the verse. Yamadibir yoga patehi kama lobadibir muhu. Same verse. Yamadibir yoga patehi kama lobahato muhu. Mukunda sevaya yadvat tatatma dana shamyati. The atma which is constantly afflicted by lust and greed will not be satisfied by Ashtanga yoga and other paths as much as by direct service to Mukunda. Okay. Because there needs to be some avenue for manifestation of emotions. So he says, because Shamo Man Nishta Buddhe, Bhagavatam says, absorbing the intelligence in me constitutes mental equilibrium. By developing greed for Krishna's service, the Vaishnava's service and chanting the holy names, there will be no greed for inferior things. So you see here, we have to first develop greed for Krishna's service. Before developing greed, we have to first develop liking for Krishna's service. Before developing a liking for Krishna's service, we should develop a liking for Krishna. So when we have liking for Krishna, then gradually we will develop liking for Krishna's service. And when we develop liking for Krishna's service, that will mature into greed for Krishna's service. And then greed for material things will go away naturally. So they have to go. They are not getting dovetailed. Material greed is not getting dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. Material greed, spiritual greed is developed so that material greed can be given up. One who becomes greedy by seeing the Vrajavasi's service to Krishna is very fortunate. Now he is talking about greed in the form of raga, loba. So this loba that he is talking about is lobamayi shraddha. That which manifests on the platform of raganuga. But raganuga, that kind of greed, can be developed only after anartha nivritti. You see here, this kind of greed can be developed only after anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti means what? Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madamatsarya. All these six material emotions are gone. Tadarajastamo bhava kama lobha dayaschaye chetayete ranavidham sthitam satte prasidati. So after these material anarthas are gone, then we develop qualification for greed. So there is no dovetailing of material greed. It is just that, you have greed for this. You are very greedy for money, na? From tomorrow you feel greedy for Krishna. It does not happen like that. Okay. And this greed that he is talking about is not a byproduct of Rajoguna at all. Okay. So he is telling first give up Rajoguna. And then you will develop spiritual greed like that. So he says, by the mercy of that greed, he attains qualification for Raga Bhakti. Raga Bhakti is Raganuga Bhakti. Once material greed is vanquished in proportion to the development of greed for Ragatmika service. So it is not that material greed is becoming spiritual greed. When spiritual greed develops, material greed is destroyed. That is the point. If one has greed for nice foodstuffs, drinks, sleeping, smoking, and drinking wine, then one's devotion diminishes. Greed for wine, wealth, and women is most contrary to devotional principles. Those who have a desire for attaining pure devotional service should carefully give up such things. You see, is not telling that, oh, your attachment to wine will naturally become attachment to Charanamrit one day. No, not like that. They have to carefully give up such things. Whether for auspicious things or sinful things, greed for anything not related to Krishna is most despicable. Most despicable means it should be given up. Right? Greed only in relation to Krishna is the cause of all auspiciousness. The greed attained by the Mahajans for the topics of Krishna is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. Okay? So this is Shaunakadi Rishis. Okay? Are expressing to Sutra Goswami. Shaunakadi Rishis are expressing to Sutra Goswami their greed for Krishna Katha. Vayam tuna vitrupyama uttama shloka vikrame yat shrinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. So he says, Vayam tuna vitrupyama. We never become tired. Uttama shloka vikrame. Of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. Yat shrinvatam rasagyanam. Rasagyanam means for those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with Krishna. Yat shrinvatam swadu swadu pade pade. They relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. So this is the kind of greed. So it's just like, not that you have agreed to hear material news, and if they take the newspaper away from your hand and put Bhagavatam in your hand, and suddenly you will become greed for studying Bhagavatam. It is not like that. Okay. So another name for greed in relationship with Krishna is adar or respect. We will discuss this in detail later. So, this is what he speaks about in this relationship with laulyam in the form of greed. So, greed for, basically what he says is, develop attachment to Krishna. When you develop attachment to Krishna, when we develop attachment to Krishna, in proportion to our development of attachment to Krishna, we will develop these favorable emotions in relationship with Krishna, and automatically the material greed, material lust, everything will vanish. Right? Bhakti pareshan bhavo viraktir anyatra chaisha trika eka kala. Prapadya manasya yatashnatasya tushti pushti shudapayo anubhasam. So he says that just like by eating every morsel of food, one develops strength, satisfaction, and pacification of hunger. All three are simultaneously accomplished with every morsel of food. Similarly, when one performs bhakti, along with that bhakti, one also develops a transcendental realization of Krishna at various levels, and detachment from material attachments or gratification. So one develops that. So this happens parallelly. That's what he says. So therefore, this is the essence of greed. How do you address greed? By again developing attachment to Krishna. Develop attachment to Krishna. So whatever aids our developing attachment to Krishna, which is primarily association of devotees. So when we are in the right association, where everyone is adoring Krishna, worshipping Krishna, relishing things, objects, subject matter, connection with Krishna, then we will also naturally develop that attachment to Krishna. And when we develop that attachment, then naturally, when we develop this attachment, then naturally what happens? we become detached from things of this world, like that. Any quick comments, discussion points, questions with respect to this laulya in the form of greed that we have discussed till now? Anything anyone would like to ask, share, comment? Okay. If there is none, then we will move on to the third form of laulya, which is laulya in the form of desire. Laulya in the form of desire. So, here Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, another meaning of laulya is desire. So he says, desires are of two types. Desire for material enjoyment and desire for liberation. So he says, unless one gives up these two types of desires, one cannot practice devotional service. Of course, pure devotional service. That's what he's talking about. Unless one gives up these two desires, one cannot practice pure devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami says in Bhaktirasam Sindhu, Bhukti Mukti Spriha Yavat Pishachi Hridi Vartate Tavat Bhakti Sukasyatra Katam Abhyudayo Bhavet. So he says, Katam Tavat Bhakti Sukasya Hridi Abhyudayo Bhavet. How can the happiness of bhakti arise in the heart? Bhukti mukti spriha pishachi yavat atra vartate. As long as the witch of desire for enjoyment and liberation remains there, how can one, how can the happiness of bhakti arise in the heart, which is haunted by the witches of bhukti and mukti? So there are two types of material enjoyments, worldly and heavenly. Okay, 12 slides remaining. Maybe we can complete it today. So he says, wealth, women, children, opulences, kingdom, victory, good food, good sleep, associating with women for sense enjoyment, good birth, and other pleasures are all worldly enjoyments. Going to heaven and drinking nectar there, as well as sense gratification free of old age, are all heavenly enjoyments. Okay. So there are, these are material enjoyments, worldly enjoyments, and heavenly enjoyments. When the heart is filled with the desire to enjoy, one cannot selflessly worship Krishna. When the heart is filled with the desire to enjoy, one cannot selflessly worship Krishna. Therefore, unless the desire for enjoyment is completely uprooted from the heart, one's progress in devotional service will be obstructed. So one has to completely uproot these desires eventually. Of course, the means of uprooting is to practice devotional service only. And the more by practice of devotional service, the more they get uprooted, the more we will be able to sincerely practice devotional service. Like that. So he says, in this regard, there is one thing to be said. He says, if all these material enjoyments are favorable to devotional service, then householders can accept them without sin. So, if all these kinds of material enjoyments, if they can be favorably utilized in Krishna's service, then householders can accept them without any sin. In that case, all these enjoyments are not called enjoyments, but rather they are means of progress in a devotee's life. Okay. For example, accepting prasadam, accepting a shelter, especially if you accept that shelter as the Lord's abode in which we stay there as a caretaker of that abode, then, you know, that mood itself becomes a means of progress. Okay. So Srimad Bhagavatam has stated, Bhagavatam says, Dharmasya hi apavargasya narto artayopakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labaya hi smritaha. He says, artaha, material results, na artaya upakalpate. Material results are not suitable as the goal. Material results are not suitable as the goal. Apavargasya hi dharmasya, for the person dedicated to the higher spiritual goals. So, like the devotees, they are dedicated to the higher spiritual goal of prema. So they should not, even though by practice one may get some material benefits, but one should not consider those material benefits as goals in themselves. So he says, kamo labhaya, labhaya, to attain kama, the attainment of material assets, na artasya hi smritaha, is not the desire. Sorry. Artasya labhaya na kama, na kamo hi smritaha. Attainment of material assets is not the desire. Dharmai kantasya, of the person who is dedicated to the higher path. Even though by practice bhakti, as a result of bhakti, one may get some material benefits also, but one should not start performing bhakti for getting those material benefits. Okay. As Srila Rupa Goswami mentions in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that, you know, as by practice of bhakti, one develops, by practice of bhakti, one of the benefits of bhakti is shubhada. One develops auspiciousness. And he defines what is shubhada. Shubhani preenanam sarvajagatam anuraktata sadgunadi pradatvam sukha pradatvam. So he says that there are four aspects of shubhada. Four aspects of shubhada, which is, you know, and one of those aspects is sukha pradatvam. Practice of bhakti bestows happiness. Okay. Practice of bhakti bestows happiness. And he says, happiness in the early stages of bhakti, he says there are three levels of happiness. In the early levels of bhakti, he says, vaishayikam. One gets happiness in the form of some kind of material gratification. On the material level, one develops some happiness in the form of a more tangible material happiness, material gratification. Okay. So, this is one level, vaishayikam. And gradually, when one progresses more on the path of devotional service, then one gets higher gratification in the form of brahmam, which is the bliss of liberation. And still, when one progresses further, then one reaches the higher aishwaram, the bliss of prema. So, but in the initial stages, one also gets some more tangible material pleasures, but one should not get attached to it. So that's what he says. So in the next verse, he elaborates on this. He says, kamasya na indriya pritir labo jiveta yavata jivasya tatva jigyasa narto yascheha karma bhi. For one who desires apavarga, or in our case, we should take it as prema. For one who desires prema, sense pleasure attained from enjoying sense objects is not the goal. Even though by practice of bhakti, we may definitely get some sense pleasure. Like, I mean, I am sure you must have experienced that after coming to Krishna consciousness, even our quality of prasadam, gratification in the form of eating, has improved actually for most of us. Before coming to Krishna consciousness, you know, we probably were not eating such wonderful foodstuffs. But now after coming to Krishna consciousness, that bliss in the form of even taste, our taste buds are experiencing much more enhanced form of gratification, right? So for one who desires prema, sense pleasure attained from enjoying sense objects, even though it may come as a byproduct of bhakti, but one should not consider it as the goal as long as one lives. The goal of life is tattva jigyasa, jivasya tattva jigyasa. For us, this tattva jigyasa means, how can I please Krishna? What is accomplished by prescribed duties is not the goal. Okay. For us, what is accomplished by practicing bhakti, the intermediate results in the form of material classification, this is not the goal. This is not the goal. Okay. So for us, he says, another name of dharma or occupational service is Yukta Vairagya. So Yukta Vairagya is the occupational service for devotees. So devotees, the for devotees, the occupational service is Yukta Vairagya. Engaging whatever we have in the service of Krishna. That is our occupational service. Desire for liberation must be rejected. There are five types of liberation, namely Salokya, Sarshti, Samipya, Sarupya, and Sayujya. You know the hills five times. Salokya means to live on the same planet. Sarshti means same opulence. Samipya means to become to get personal association of the Lord. Sarupya means to develop the same bodily features. And Sayujya means to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. So he says, Sayujya liberation in the form of merging with the Lord is hated by the practitioner of devotional service. Kaiva narakayate, as the Acharyas say. Although Salokya, Sarshi, Samipya and Sarupya are devoid of the desire for enjoyment, still they are undesirable. So even though there may not be a desire for material gratification in getting even those kinds of personal liberation, but still aspiration for these liberations is unfavorable. We should aspire for service. And if that service opportunity comes along with this Sarupya, Sarshti, etc., we don't mind. But aspiring for them is unfavorable. Okay, for practicing pure devotees. Now he says, as soon as living entity becomes free from material bondage by the strength of devotion, he immediately attains liberation. But that does not mean, so a devotee does not aspire for liberation. But he is not deprived of it. He is not deprived of liberation. He should not be aspiring for it, but he will not be deprived of it. That liberation, however, is not the principal fruit of bhakti. So even though he may get liberation, or at some point of his practice, he will experience the bliss of liberation, but that is not his goal. The pure love for Krishna attained by liberated souls is the principal fruit of sadhana bhakti. Okay, this is the mukhya phala. In this regard, the statement of Sri Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is appropriate. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, Salokya dicharya dihaya sevadvar tabuka dachita bhakta kare angikar. So he says, if there is a chance to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a pure devotee sometimes accepts Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya or Sarshti forms of liberation, but never Sayujya. Sayujya shunite bhakte rahaye ghrina bhai naraka vanche tabu Sayujya nalai. A pure devotee does not like even to hear about Sayujya Mukti, which inspires him with fear and hatred. Indeed, the pure devotee would rather go to hell than merge into the effulgence of the Lord, where he will not get any opportunity to serve. Right? Then, Brahme Ishvare Sayujya Duita Prakar, Brahma Sayujya Haite Ishvara Sayujya Dikkar. Sarvam Bhattacharya continued, there are two kinds of Sayujya Mukti, merging into the Brahman effulgence and merging into the personal body of the Lord. Merging into the Lord's body is even more abominable than merging into this effulgence. Okay. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the purport is that the liberation of a devotee in the form of freedom from bondage is easily attained by the will of Krishna. One need not specifically endeavor for liberation. Jarayatyashu yakosham nigirnam analoyata. Kapila Dev says, one naturally gets liberation. One need not specifically endeavor for that. That is why one should not pollute his endeavor for devotional service with desires. It is the essential duty of the practicing devotee to carefully give up materialistic lavalya. Okay. So in this way, he describes the third form of lavalya in the form of desire. So desire means of two types, desire for material enjoyment and desire for liberation. How one should carefully give up this abhilasha and only constantly maintain the abhilasha of pleasing Krishna and prema. Anya abhilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam. Like that. Okay. This brings us to the end of this essay on lavalyam. So we have discussed lavalyam in the form of desire also. Any quick comments, discussion points, questions, anything anyone would like to share as and before we wind up for the day? Okay, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So I just want to understand that those who aspire for the five types of liberation, especially the four types, you know, they may not, or they definitely don't have any desires for sense gratification or any kind of desire.
Not the material kind of, not material gratification.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Desire impelled by the three modes, you know,
yeah.
That is definitely not there
but
for...
But still, there is a tinge of selfishness there.
Yeah, so this is why I wanted to ask if, although the material desire for sense gratification is not there, still they may not have so much desire for Krishna's service.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, is it possible to have one of those four or five types of, is it possible to have attained one of those four types of liberation and have like zero desire for Krishna's service? Is that possible?
No. It's never zero. It's never zero. Definitely, there will be desire to serve Krishna, but that will be compromised little bit with that desire to enjoy the opulence and the pleasure of Vaikuntha.
It's a matter of priority for them, right? Like they might, their desire for enjoyment might supersede their desire to serve.
Sometimes, yeah, they can. So therefore, even though such people may reach Vaikuntha, but they will never experience the pleasure that is experienced by pure devotees in Vaikuntha. So not everyone in Vaikuntha experiences the same level of bliss. So those who want only to please Krishna in loving service, they will also be in Vaikuntha. And even though they are not aspiring for a higher level of pleasure, Krishna will bestow them with the highest love pleasure. Whereas these other people who may be staying in Vaikuntha, they will experience a much lower level of pleasure than the Prema Bhaktas, like that.
Yeah. Okay, and also second question is, you made a distinction between those who want to merge into the body of Krishna and those who want to merge into his effulgence. So now mm-hmm. the effulgence emanates from his body only, so I'm not sure the distinction.
There is a difference between this Brahma Sayujya and Bhagavat Sayujya. It's mentioned somewhere, Mataji. Give me some time. Next time I will refer it and exactly tell you what is the exact difference. There is a difference. I have read it somewhere, but I am not able to immediately recollect what is the difference between the two. I will refer and get back next time.
Okay. And but definitely that distinction is not the distinction between Maya bodies and Brahma bodies. That's a different distinction, right?
Yeah. That's a different distinction. These are both valid aspirations, valid in the sense, not valid from pure devotional perspective, but from a non-pure devotional perspective, these are like valid aspirations. So surely this is not the difference between Mayavad and Brahmavad.
Yeah, because you said they're both valid, but one is still considered abominable and the other not, right?
For the devotees. The devotees considered abominable.
Yeah, one of them. The one where you merge with his body, that's abominable.
Yeah, but exactly, I will find out what exactly is the difference and I will get back.
But the problem with both of them is the fact that it kind of conflicts with the ability to serve Krishna, isn't it?
Uh-huh. But still it's like a stool is abominable, but they say that between dry stool and wet stool, one is more abominable than the other, like that.
Okay.
I'm sorry for...
No, I've heard that one before, but it's always funny. Okay, thank you, Babu.
Hare Krishna. Vani Shri Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. You just made a mention that the experience of all the kinds of the liberation, excluding the Sayujya, even those liberated souls in these platforms, they don't experience that highest transcendental bliss of service or prema of Krishna. Okay. Now, these liberated souls are already in the Vaikuntha planet. Could be because they don't have the knowledge of the highest knowledge of the Krishna Prema or engaging in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. It could
be
that.
They engage in service. They engage in service. But
that is in Vaikuntha planet. So it's other form of Krishna, right? But not the highest Goloka Vrindavana, isn't it?
Oh, in Goloka Vrindavan, anything less than Prema, they cannot enter only.
Yeah. So these kinds of liberations are all in the Vaikuntha planets.
Correct, you had made
a mention that they're not able to experience highest transcendental bliss. But do these liberated souls are aware of that particular aspect of highest transcendental bliss that I'm not experiencing?
No. If they were aware, they would aspire for it.
Again, it will go to restlessness, right, Prabhu? So that means they're not aware.
If they become aware, they will become restless and aspire for it. But they are not aware.
They're not aware. So it's more of the, the Gyan perspective. They're not aware of it. Or they're not fortunate enough
They are not aware of it because they have not come in touch with such pure devotees to become aware of it.
Okay. Now, coming to my state of mind, all these aspects for me is only technical, just knowledge, gyan, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wouldn't understand other than just the technical information of all these various kinds of liberation, including service to Krishna or Krishna Prema? Honestly, I really don't know, Prabhu, because in the first stand, I'm doing the sadhana, but aspiring for that. But I really do not know how it would be or how is that kind of an experience, other than just that what I've heard, what I've read in the books of Srila Prabhupada.
Honestly, Mataji, you are honest and thoughtful, but I think we all are on the same boat. Trust me, we all are on the same boat. None of us have an experience of what is the real bliss of liberation, even Sayujya Mukti. Because the bliss of impure liberation also, for a devotee, he experiences it. That level of bliss only at the stage of nishta, ruchi, like that. At the stage of ruchi, asakti, like that. So we are still in... They will not go to Sahaja Mukti. They will not...
But they will understand what it would look like. What is that, at least the awareness of it.
Yeah, awareness of what is that bliss of liberation, one can experience only at that stage. So for all of us, it is theoretical only.
But for me right now, Prabhu, I do not even have that attraction or attachment to Krishna. I mean, I'm being very straight. Am I missing something? Because when I'm doing sadhana, I feel it is just mechanical or ritual, or because Srila Prabhupada has said it. I believe in his words because there's no other option is what I feel around, right? So I'm going by his words and by his principles, but I know there's a lot of lacuna in my practices, but I'd want to give up. I'll just put in an effort to strive further. But honestly, I still have not attained that, what do you call that, attraction or, you know, likingness. Like the way, for simple example, Prabhu, I can go and extend to do anything to please my daughter. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? But yeah. I'm not doing the same thing when it comes to Krishna. Oh, come on. No, sorry, Krishna. Today I can't do it. I'll do it probably tomorrow. You understand what I'm saying, Prabhu?
Yeah.
I'm not having that, Prabhu, honestly. So,
I mean, the very fact that you are, I'm sure everyone who is hearing you is able to sense a sense of a regret in your voice, and you are at least able to see and feel that this is not correct, and which means you are open to improving and rectification in future. That is a very good starting point. And again, as you said, I think most of us are on the same platform. You know, maybe different, little bit higher, little bit lower, but we all are struggling. We all have certain kinds of material attachment, little bit more than even our attachment to Krishna. But we all have agreed that, yeah, we have to work on it. And by gradual practice of Krishna consciousness, slowly our attachment to Krishna will increase and our material attachments will slacken more and more. So we don't have to become very desperate out of about it. This attachment, as I mentioned, bhakti pareshanubhavo viraktir anyatra chesha trika eka kala. Gradually, when we start practicing bhakti a little bit more and more sincerely, then detachment from material things and attachment to Krishna will automatically gradually increase also. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Okay. I think we will pause here. We have just 4 minutes left. I think we will end our discussion here and we will continue this discussion next Wednesday. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. I think we will end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur Pad ki jai, Shri Bhakti Aloka ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.